Oh, this is a great workout song. This is a great video.
Purple leggings.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This stoked the fires of my youth. I remember Kimber went crazy when she played this song, when she sang this song. September 24th, 1982. Yeah. My Uncle Richie, man, came through. I'll never forget that. I was so happy. Because I thought that day I was not going to that concert. Oh, man.
Back at the video.
Are you looking at it?
Yeah. Boy, there's some guys in some very revealing.
Why did you lock in on that, by the way?
Well, the very first. Wow, I'd forgotten about that part of the video because that wasn't the part that captivated me. But wow. Okay.
Well, Jamie Bloom is down in the studio.
I will be sending you a picture of a piece of memorabilia that I have in my basement of a signed picture from Olivia Newton-John from her 50th birthday party in Nashville that I have hanging on my wall.
How'd you get that?
So, a good friend, Preston Stanfill, formerly the drummer of Shelley Wright, and now the house drummer for Big Earl at the Floribama Club in Gulf Shores, Alabama. Oh, thank you, Preston.
How you doing?
I'm good. Baseball camp going on over at Blue Valley Rec, back to school camp. So big shout out to those 25 kids we got out there today and yesterday and tomorrow.
Did you get the listeners? Did you get them? Did you get the winners?
Winner.
I'm working Marco today. Look at him.
How did the 100th caller go yesterday?
He didn't like 10, it. Well, we had an intern there yesterday. Marco, we got to give away these tickets. I mean,
working overtime.
I could tell that one of Marco's least favorite parts of the job is answering phones.
I guess if you don't want to, I can just text Chad Boger back and say Marco said no.
Uh oh.
And that's my only other option. You know. Oh, did you see it? Am I supposed to say this? Am I supposed to? Did you see who RSVP'd yesterday?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You don't think I saw?
Well, say it then, smart mouth.
I'm sad.
I can't believe you're not going to be there.
Unbelievable.
I can't
man.
Believe it.
I had already.
I won't believe it.
I'd already booked a golf weekend in Chicago with some boys up there. I might see Frank Winters, Danny Anthony.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know who you won't see?
Any of you guys.
Ochai Agbaji, Mitch Lightfoot, and Chris Tehan.
There you go.
Because they just RSVP'd yesterday.
Add them to the list.
Yeah. Just add them to the long list.
Right. You'll be there in spirit, though.
I will be.
I wish you were going to be there. It's going to be fantastic.
When Chad first reached out, I was like, oh, my God. And I can't. Yeah. I've already booked. Can't
do it. You're always the yes.
Always the yes.
You're always the yes.
I know. If there's any way I could pull it off, I would do it. But golf is first thing Friday morning. So
I love Michael Massey, and I'm very happy he's up. Nate Eaton has been impressive. And you add in what the Royals already have up, and Melendez and Witt and Vinny Pasquantino. Kyle Isbell deserves at-bats down the stretch. What do you think of let's start with Massey and Eaton now that they are back up, at least for the rest of the season, and it looks like they're going to get plenty of at-bats, hopefully.
I was out there Thursday, and just the energy around the club, two things. I mean, obviously Hosmer was back in town, so you're going to get to see that whole thing with everybody, and I was out there early enough to see BP and just him, you know, buzzing around the stadium and saying hi to everybody for the people that work at the stadium and fans and all that kind of stuff. And I had an opportunity to talk to old teammate Carlos Febles, so that was a good time, and Jason Veritek. But there was just a different kind of energy out there, I mean, with everything that had happened and all the new kids coming up. And I'm just excited because it brought an entire new energy to this club. You know, this is kind of what we were hoping was going to happen. To be able to give some guys the opportunity to get some at-bats at the major league level this year, and this is exactly what's happening. So we're going to go with the kids the rest of the way. And just to see how everybody's stepping up. I mean, Massey's been awesome. Eaton's been good. It seemed to have given Melendez a little bit more energy too. And to see what they did, not, you know, obviously walk off by Prado. They won the game. I was there a Thursday night, big three-run home run by Salvi that night. And then to see what they did on Sunday with rookies having 12 RBIs, I mean, there's reason for optimism with all the stuff that we've been talking about throughout the entire year that we was hope was going to happen, you know, come trade deadline. And now it is here, and we're getting to see the young kids, and hopefully pitching continues to take a step forward. Obviously, the offensive side of things with all of our prospects are doing great. And so I'm excited about the last 2.5 months of the season.
Okay, so this question is for both of you. They have all of these young players, and it feels like they were maybe one trade short of really clearing out the playing time necessary. Like Michael A. Taylor, that would have been nice to see them, you know, move him, or even Hunter Dozier. So right now there is somewhat of a log jam. You want these guys up here, but you don't want them, you know, sitting on the bench. I don't want them sitting on the bench. And I've said before, I'm not concerned about Michael Taylor or Hunter Dozier and those guys getting at bats. I want to see the young guys. But how, and this doesn't have to be just for the rest of the season, moving forward, what do you do here? I think one of the interesting things about all these prospects is the versatility. And they can play, most of them can play multiple positions. And so how do you go about getting everyone the necessary bats so you could properly evaluate them in the second half? You have Salvi and Melendez obviously can both catch, okay? Prado can play first base, but he can also play corner outfield. Pasquantino's only DH for first base. Massey can play second, and he's played some third. Bobby Witt can play second, short, and third. Nicky Lopez can play second, short, and third. Nate Eaton can play all three outfield positions, and he can play third base. Kyle Isbell's, you know, he can play all the outfield positions. Michael A. Taylor, center fielder. And then Hunter Dozier can play outfield and third base and first base. But again, I'm not, you know, bending over backwards to try to find him at bats. Is it okay in your mind when you're evaluating these young players to keep constantly moving them around and shifting them around in order to get at bats? Would you like to see maybe some consistency at where they're playing defensively? How should they go about this the rest of the season?
That's going to be the tricky thing, and it's going to be, you know, the shell game a little bit. What you would like to see is be able to put guys in spots and keep them in the lineup and be able to run them out there every day and get some comfortability going out there and have a set lineup. That's not going to happen. Because of all the different options that you have to have. So that's the drawback from having all these guys up here is you're probably going to have a Buddy Bell situation where you're going to have a different lineup every single day and move guys around a little bit up and down the lineup and different spots. And
That was Bob Boone that had the different lineup every day.
Oh, it was Bob Boone.
The Boone-o-meter.
Yeah. The Boone-o-meter. Well, that's who I played for. So, yeah, it was a different one every day. And that's the drawback, but I think being able to do that a little bit, you're going to see more of what can these kids handle, you know, because when you get comfortable and you're in the same spot in the lineup, things maybe get a little bit easier because you know exactly what you're going to do every single day. Hey, man, you might not be in the same spot in the lineup every single day. You might not be in the same spot defensively every single day, but that doesn't change the fact that you need to go out there and put your best at-bats and your best defense moving forward. And now you're going to see what these kids are made of and put them in enough situations to see. Hopefully they succeed. I mean, that's the thing with failure at the major league level. That's what makes guys better. Figure out, you know, what you can bounce back from when maybe you are going through a stretch, or figure out how to be in the lineup 2 days and then sit for 2 days and then come back and contribute on that next day you're back in there. So a lot of learning, a lot of lessons to be learned with how things are going to shake out, I think, from a lineup standpoint the rest of the year.
So with Nate Eaton, let's go with him here. When you look at where he's played defensively, like I said, he can play all three outfield spots, and he can play third base. In the minors this year, he played 25 games at third, 2 games at short, 8 games in left, 7 games in center, and 42 in right. And so far with the big team, He's played four in center and three in right. So he hasn't had a chance to play third base, even though he had 25 games there in the minors. When it comes to Michael Massey, again, he can play third base. He hasn't had the opportunity to do that very much. And so second base has been his primary position. But this, I think this, that's part of what the Royals can do in this second half is to evaluate these guys not only offensively but defensively. Like Massey had 74 games at second and two at third in the minors, and then this year with the they've given him one game at third base so far. And so what I want to know, I would like to see every day at third base, or most days, either Eaton or Massey, to see if one of those guys can be the third baseman. And then when Eaton isn't playing third base, I'd like to see him at center to evaluate, can he be the next center fielder, at least for now, or can he play center field? Because you want other options. I think with the Royals, they hope it's going to be Drew Waters next year. But
where's Drew Waters right now?
He's kicking ass at AAA.
There you go.
Right? But isn't that important to find out? Okay, can Eaton play center field well
enough?
Can he
play center field every single day?
Can he play third base?
Can he anchor the outfield?
We know Massey can play second. Can he play third base? And remember, Massey, didn't he win the minor league gold glove for second base? And they only give out, that's for all levels, right?
Correct.
And so he's fabulous there, but can he play third base? I know they drafted a couple of guys in the first two rounds that could look to be a corner outfielder and third baseman of the future.
That's a long way off.
Right, but I want to know about Massey and Eaton, or are you just content to say, okay, they can play multiple positions and that's how they're good, that's what they're going to do for us?
What I like is you're going to get more than just a September call-up look at these guys, you know, from how do they fit in for us moving forward possibly, or hey, man, maybe that's another piece. We've got a couple guys that are Swiss Army knives, kind of like Whit Merrifield used to be, that can play all over the place. And if we have an overabundance of those type of guys, maybe we use one of those guys to go get some more pitching, or we go use those guys to get somebody else. I know we all want guys that we drafted and developed to be in the big leagues with our team. That's what you hope, and that's what's been really cool about this entire bunch. And you've seen the stats lately that our entire lineup was homegrown, and that has only happened so many times throughout the course of the last 20 years. That's what you hope for, but at the same time, you have more bodies that can contribute at the major league level. That gives you more currency to be able to go out and get other things that you need, whether that's relief pitching or anything else. I mean, we seem to have tipped the scales. Like, we had all this pitching, young pitching a couple years ago that's coming up, and now we've got all these young position players now. We've got to be able to find that mix of, you know, what's going to make this team have a chance to, you know, go for a playoff spot within the next couple of years. I mean, how do we maneuver our way through that? Who do we keep, and who do we try to go get other pieces with?
Nick Prado and Michael Massey last year won minor league gold gloves at first and second, awarded by Rawlings during at the end of the season to one player at each position across all levels. So Prado and Massey were recognized as the best in the minors.
That's impressive.
Right. I mean, you know, so if Massey is so good at second, do you want to jack with that? Or do you think, well, he's that good at second, so he can hold down third. We only have a third base of the future because we've got Nicky Lopez. I mean, you see what I'm saying, Nate? Like, how would you utilize these guys the rest of the season?
Well, I haven't seen enough of Massey to have an idea, because it is playing second base and playing third base are two very different things. You know, some guys that could be gold glove second baseman would not be very good third baseman. You know, throwing arm is different.
I wonder how they could find that out,
well,
if they could do it or not.
My guess is they already have a pretty good idea, because it's not like they just never saw this guy play before. You can see what a guy's skill set is, and I haven't asked anybody in the organization. You know, some guys, like, I would not look at Nicky Lopez and think, yeah, you want that guy at the hot corner. Personally, you know, he can play short and he can play second really well, but one of his biggest attributes is his range. Range doesn't matter as much at third base. It's your ability, right? Quick reactions, being able to knock things down and then have a howitzer for an arm to get the ball across the diamond.
So who's your third baseman next year, though?
Well, I don't know yet. I'll tell you who it's not is Hunter Dozier. They've got a problem on their hands in Hunter Dozier, in my opinion, because he's over 2,000 plate appearances now, and his career OPS is 744, which for a guy who plays below average defense pretty much anywhere you put him, that's not good enough. You shouldn't be blocking anybody.
Well, and he's on the other side of 30 now.
Yeah.
Well, he's not good enough defensively either at third base.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's below average defensively pretty much at every position you put him at, right?
Okay, here's the other –
That's a problem because they still are paying him two more years.
And here's the other question. Is Nicky Lopez – is he on this team with this other young talent, is he a starter or is he a utility guy?
I think he's turning himself into a utility guy.
I think so, too.
Because he could play quality defense at second, short, and third.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep. He's just not hitting enough. If he hit like he did last year.
He was a 300 hitter last year.
Yeah, with a decent on-base percentage.
Yes.
He's got to get on base all the time to be in the lineup because there's no power there. And I love Nicky Lopez. And if he hit like he did last year, you can make a case that he belongs in the lineup every day. But the way he's hitting this year is really hard to.
If he hit like he did last year, you could make the case we'll put him at shortstop, mm-hmm. and then Bobby Witt Jr. is your third baseman,
right.
and then Michael Massey is your second baseman,
right.
and then Nate Eaton plays in the outfield.
Right, right.
But can you make that case? Is Nicky's defense that good where he's an everyday guy, or, again, is he a utility guy?
Yeah, I mean, in today's baseball, it's hard to carry a bat. His OPS is under 600 this year, you know? I mean, again, so like last year, his OPS was 744, same as Hunter Dozier's is this year. You give me a gold glove middle infielder with a 744 OPS, and I feel like, yeah, that guy's helping the team. It's hard to carry anybody with a 598 OPS, you know, at any however good your defense is. And so, yeah, I think he's turning himself into a utility guy, and I think that's still a helpful guy because, like you said, he can play a lot of different places. To go back to what you were saying about the stats about everybody being homegrown, that says something, but it says some good things and, to me, also some bad things. We've talked about Dayton Moore's comment that the club needs to be more transactional. Well, the only guys they're really showing right now they're willing to be transactional on are guys they don't want anymore. You know, like, who have they traded this year? Santana. Well, everybody wanted to get rid of Santana. He wasn't going to be part of the future. He wasn't, you know, it was like they were just holding on to him, hoping he got hot so they could dump him. Whit Merrifield, well, they didn't want him around anymore. He didn't want to be around anymore, and they didn't want him around anymore. So they traded him for whatever they could get.
They traded him to Canada.
They traded him to Canada. Well, he got that shot right away, didn't he?
What?
Anyway, but like guys that you have player control on that you like, that you value, they didn't trade any of those guys.
They never have.
Guys in their system. The one time was Will Myers.
Right.
To me, like, that was the one time I can think of off the top of my head where they traded somebody that was part of the system that had a big future, and they said, no, we're going to trade him to get something we need right now. And it worked out actually pretty damn well, didn't it?
Really well, yeah.
And everybody in town was mad as hell at him for doing it too, right? Can't believe we're trading away the minor league player of the year for, you know. But to me, like, that's – if it's all homegrown guys, that means you're not trading any of your own guys. They're not trading. They're whole. And even JJ kind of said before the trade deadline, well, we got Barlow. We got these guys coming back for a couple years. We don't need to trade them. And maybe they just didn't get any good offers, or maybe they're overvaluing their own guys.
Well, we've done that for years. You know, I mean,
yeah.
and we covet our own guys that we've kept through to a fault. We've done that for a long time. And that's why now we're in that position with Hunter Dozier. You know, we gave him that contract.
You're going to have a really tough time trading him. Nobody wants. He's a negative war player.
Right? I mean, who would have said a year ago that after Nicky Lopez hitting 300 that we'd have somebody coming up through the minor leagues that is possibly just as good defensively and better offensively than Nicky Lopez? I didn't see Massey coming that fast or Nate Eaton or any of those guys. So that's a good problem to have. I mean, you have to continue to do things at the major league level better than the next guy coming. I mean, that's just how this game works. I love Nicky Lopez. I like Nicky Lopez personally.
And Michael Great Garcia guy. Looked pretty good at shortstop,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was at the plate defensively.
But hey,
He's a young kid, right?
Right. And
prospect.
And got an opportunity and put some at-bats and got in there and did something right out of the gate. Oh, look at this guy. Now we got another guy that maybe wasn't on the radar so much. Good problems to have, but still big decisions to be made with guys getting at-bats that don't need to be getting at-bats.
Okay, here are the guys that I have to have in the lineup. I mean, more times than not, everyone gets a day off. But then again, do they need it? You know, evaluate, play. I don't think Vinny needs many days off at DH, but I need MJ Melendez, Nick Prado, Vinny Pasquantino, Bobby Witt, Michael Massey, Nate Eaton, and I will include Kyle Isbell because I want to find out about Isbell. Give him consistent playing time. I need those seven in the lineup at all times. And you could do that because of the versatility. Melendez can catch and play right field. Prado can play corner, outfield, and play first base. Pasquantino, DH at first base. Bobby Witt, I'd like to see him left at shortstop, and he can play, you know, third base if you need him to. Michael Massey, give him some looks at third, see how he handles it. But he predominantly second base. Nate Eaton can play all three outfield spots in third base. Kyle Isbell, see if he can handle center field. Now, you ask, what about Salvi? Of course I like Salvi in the lineup. I also don't want to run him into the ground in a second half that the Royals aren't competing. Right? Is that fair?
100%.
Okay. And then for the last spot, Nicky Lopez and Hunter Dozier. Okay, whatever. Whatever position's open. Probably that I'd rather see Nicky.
Because
at least defensively he's good. Hunter Dozier's not.
Because of where we're at in the standings, you have the opportunity to be able to do that for 2 months. You know? And I hope they do. To be able to give these guys the opportunity to show what they can do going next year. This year's a wash, obviously, as far as standings. Let's see what these guys can do to see what we're going to do moving into 2023.
Tell me where I'm wrong, Nate. About what? If there's like a player, I don't need to see him get a bass for anything there. Just you tell me.
I want to see the young guys, and I don't know what they do about Hunter Dozier. I do. I think that's a serious conundrum on their hands now, because they got to pay him like some decent money.
But like you said, he cannot be standing in the way of any young player getting consistent at bats. You're paying.
You
him
see a, this you know, happening you know, in other spots around the league too.
Guys getting paid that aren't producing?
They got to go. And guys are cutting bait with guys. I mean, you just saw Franmil Reyes get designated, and then he's gone. And then you just saw
Didi
Gregorius just got released by the Phillies.
How much of Hosmer's salary is getting paid by the Padres?
All of it?
Cano. How many teams has Cano been with now?
Yeah.
He's been with four this year.
I wanted the Royals to take a chance on Franmil Reyes.
But
do you really? Or do you want to see the young guys?
There's a spot I got open. He's kind of young.
So Dozier's got $7.5 million coming next year and $9.25 coming the year
but
after that.
That's not ridiculous money.
Ridiculous for here.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm not, it's sunk cost. I'm not letting the dollar signs rob me of the opportunity to develop a young player to find out if I have a third baseman of the future on my roster.
Do you think the Royals are?
Well, they can't. Well, then you're chasing your own tail. Stop it. He could play a couple of times a week. He could pinch hit. Maybe make him the best pinch hitter you've ever seen. Whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going. It is what it is. But I'm not going to look at it like, okay, it's Thursday. Who's going to play third base? Should I put Nate Eaton there or Michael Massey or Dozier? I'm not even thinking about Dozier. I want to evaluate Eaton and Massey. And if you decide on Dozier on any day, you've made the wrong decision because then you've cost yourself another opportunity to evaluate a young player at a position that you need filled for next year.
Amen. I mean, that's my point here. And you pointed out, too, wrong side of 30. He's about to turn 31 in a couple weeks. That's not a prospect. That's not like you're 31. You're not like your best days aren't ahead of you unless you're doing some stuff you're not supposed to be doing.
Right.
You know, and so like the idea of we got to get at bats for this guy to see if he comes around and rediscovers that form he had in 2019 when he had a really good year offensively.
3 years ago.
He's 31. Right. You know, and so look, you made a mistake. You gave him a big contract that you shouldn't have given him, period. I think we're at the point now where we can say, last year you kind of hoped, well, he was banged up, his hand was bothering him, maybe he was putting too much pressure on himself because of the contract and everything. And he is better offensively this year than he was last year, but not by enough. And so, like, it's time to say, okay, in my opinion, it's time to say, okay, that money's sunk cost. That's $17 million that we ain't getting back. You know, and it just is what it is. But my fear is that the track record from the Royals says when they're paying a guy money like this, they're going to do everything they can to get the value out of it and hope they can trade him or something at some point.
To a fault.
The way they did with Santana. And in the end, they got something for Santana. He did get hot, and they were able to trade him. But I'd hate to see Hunter Dozier block anybody. I don't see where the upside is on that.
There's not an upside,
you know,
in that.
And you know what? I don't blast them for making a mistake on the contract. Sometimes you got to be a little aggressive when you're a team like the Royals. You got to try to sign them quick. You know, you thought you had something in them. It didn't work out for whatever reason, but that money's gone.
Okay.
You know?
Don't shoot the messenger and don't get mad at Marco, because Marco sometimes he has good questions, but when you get all riled up, he doesn't want to ask you. So I will ask you for him. Where does Mondesi fit in all this for next year? Answer the question.
First base coach.
To the no. Answer it. Because you know why? Because they're gonna try to wedge him in there.
You know how he probably fits in?
They're gonna try something.
Oh, here we go.
He'll start the season at shortstop and then be injured before April's over.
That would make it easier.
That's so negative. But you know,
well, I'm just going to
you
go
know
on base
happen, right?
If you want to judge it off track
Do
record.
You think they will try to wedge him into the conversation?
Yes.
Next spring?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just trying to prep
yes,
you for that.
I do, and I hope they don't.
Get prepared now.
Well, you can hope all you want. You can hope all you want, and they ain't going to help you.
You know what? And he...
What?
He's going to turn 28 next year.
Yeah.
By the way, you want to talk about career OPSs too. His
Not really.
His career OPS
no,
is 687.
No. Stop.
687.
And you love to point out people's faults, don't you?
I like to be realistic. I like to be realistic, and we talk about, again, going back to being more transactional and not falling too in love with your own guys.
I'm trying to prepare you for what's going to happen, is all.
You're probably right.
I don't
right.
want you to get upset.
But, you know,
let's table that.
Here's the reason I won't get too upset. Here's the reason I won't get too upset. He'll end up injured
not poke
before.
The bear anymore.
He'll end up injured before, you know, so then we'll get back to where he's not on the field.
I agree with you, but man, this Hunter Dozier really appears to be a thorn in your side.
Well, I just think he's. I'm probably sounding more wound up about it than I really am. But just when you brought up these conversations about who we want to see play, and I got to be honest with you, like, I'm glad Whit Merrifield's gone. And that's not like a personal, I don't like Whit Merrifield thing.
Is it personal?
It's a, it's like sometimes you got to clear the brush out. You know, like you lived on a farm. Or
when did
I
do that?
In the country.
Yeah. No, you did.
You lived,
yes, you,
you
did.
Lived
okay,
rural,
remember?
You lived a rural life.
No, I didn't. You but didn't. I got shipped there every
let's,
summer
let's,
at the end of the summer.
Let's say that he did.
Let's say you lived on a farm.
Okay.
Now, follow up. I don't know where
you
this
You never
going.
Were out
follow
on a farm in Owosso?
No, there's no. Not in Owosso, no.
You're like the, you're anyways.
Have you ever handled
Urban cowboy.
The udders of a cow? Have
I
you
have.
Ever
I have.
Dealt with any teats?
Did I live on a farm? No.
No.
What were you gonna say?
Well, you know, you gotta clear brush out to allow
to clear out the barn.
Well, like
new calves coming in.
Yeah, well, like in the prairies of the Flint Hills, they burn off the old dead grass at the beginning of the spring every year because that creates a more fertile ground for the brand new prairie grass to grow. And like we have tree rows down in our.
How
do you have
this?
Tree rows in Owosso?
Sometimes.
Sure.
You have to break up with your girlfriend when you find out she was sleeping with your cousin.
Well, that's
because
that's,
she said that she was going to Blue Ridge Mall, and then you went to Blue Ridge
similar.
Mall to surprise her.
Yeah.
And then you get there, and they say, "Oh, she left with Tony." Like what?
Yeah.
And so that was.
Yeah.
Two very similar analogies.
Yeah, same thing. Definitely the same.
Hold on. Move on from that. Make a note to follow up on that later.
We had down in Arkansas, had tree rows. You know, they were the rows that in between each plot of land to break up the wind because it's, you know, it's windy out there in the prairie.
Okay, so
when I lived on a farm, we had snow fence.
Okay.
To keep the drifts of snow from getting into the crops.
I'll ask you this then. We'll leave it at this. Who would you like to see get the most opportunities at third base between now and the end of the year?
I would like to see Eaton. Because I think we know Massey's already pretty good defensively.
But at third base.
It's okay.
Anyone named Eaton or Massey. If that's not your name, then I don't want you there.
And I wouldn't be upset if Bobby Wood Jr. played there some too.
And if Nicky, but if I want Eaton and Massey, we need to find out about that.
Let them play.
Let them play. Especially if they're accumulating service time in the Houston Astrodome.
If they're accumulating service time, make it be regular at bats and everything, so that in 3 years from now. We're not still saying about Eaton. Well, we don't really know. Like we're doing with
the Let's give him a shot at third base now and see what
maybe,
we got here.
Maybe, you know, we got all these reasons. He hasn't really produced yet, but we're not really sure.
Bluma, you've got information for people. Bluma-Palooza and also baseball lessons. Give it to him.
46 days to Bluma-Palooza number 9. You can go to Bluma-Palooza.com or redwhiteandandbluma.org to get your tickets on Eventbrite. Homefieldkc.com for lessons or rental or tryouts. Also call 913-320-4404. We are adding a little steak cook-off as part of Bluma-Palooza this year.
Oh, sure, I'll judge it.
So we'll get into that a little bit more next week, but I'm excited about that. And get your tickets at Bluma-Palooza.com. And have a great time Thursday night.
You'll be there in spirit.
I will be there in spirit. I'll maybe try to call somebody live and try to get somebody to answer.
And do a little FaceTime.
I will try to do a little FaceTime and see some people.
That is Jamie Bluma back into this on WHB.
First and goal from the walk. It's a fake to Adam and a touchdown. Joe Valerio with his first ever NFL score.
Touchdown, Valerio.
And wide open, Joe Valerio, the tackle-eligible touchdown.
Deep in the depths of the Kansas City Chiefs dungeon, a mad scientist named Marty Schottenheimer was concocting a potion that reveals a multi-talented lineman. No, it's not De Niro as Frankenstein, but Joe Valerio as a receiver and sportscaster.
Well, Joe's in for Karen tonight. Karen has the night off. Joe Valerio from the Chiefs is in. Hey, give it a shot. Karen has the night off. Joe Valerio here.
No fudge for me. I'm on a diet. I'm in training. Well, maybe I will have some.
Big game coming up Sunday. As depressing a loss as the Charger game was, the Browns, the Cleveland game is huge.
Yeah, if we take the time and mope over this one, Cleveland's going to go right past us. So we just got to move on and get going.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Tim Grunhardt always said this guy had the softest hands of all the offensive linemen. Please welcome Joe Valerio to the show. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you? Steve and Nate, how are things going in KC as we're gearing up for the season? I bet everybody's excited.
Very excited. I spent the week up in St. Joe at training camp last week, and we have your former teammate Tim Grunhard in studio with us every Friday. So let's start there. Do you have any good nuggets, good stories about Tim Grunhard, please?
Oh, Tim, what? We could host a 3-hour documentary on stories about Tim. But the thing that, you know, Tim and I always go back on, I mean, you know, 25 years later, 31 years later, holy cow, I just lost 6 years of my life. 30-plus years later, Tim, I was on the Conrad Dobler show at Lynn Dickey's in Westport after I got drafted, and I came out to KC for that rookie minicamp, and I was talking about how I was so excited to be competing against players from Penn State and Notre Dame and Michigan because, you know, having gone to the University of Pennsylvania, you know, I was blocking Biff McNutty from Harvard, you know, and then I was going against, and then I'm going against Derek Thomas and, you know, Neil Smith and Howie Long. But like Kim turned that story around, and he would tell people that I got on Conrad Dobler's show and told everybody that the University of Pennsylvania could have beaten Penn State, Notre Dame, and Michigan if we would have played football games. And he, to this day, 30-plus years later, he still tells people that I said that, and we laugh about it every time we get together.
Hey, so for people that don't know, get us up to date on your life and what you're doing now.
Oh, gosh, guys, thanks for asking. No, I grew up in the Philadelphia area, and, you know, my time in Kansas City was the best time of my wife, Jennifer, and I's life. We had a blast. The community, the people, amazing. The organization, of course, everybody knows what the Hunt family does from top to bottom. And it was just an amazing time. My wife was teaching there. We were there. We were locked and loaded, right? I was working, you know, doing stuff for KNBC. I was doing stuff for KCFX Fox. And my wife was teaching, like I said. And we were going to stay. And then, lo and behold, my wife got pregnant with triplets.
Wow.
So right during my last bit of time there in Kansas City in 96, and then I had that cup of coffee with the Rams. I was kind of doing the I-70 shuffle there. I was trying to, you know, see what would happen to get out of the state of Missouri. And my wife came home and we ended up, you know, obviously coming back to the Philadelphia area where my wife and I both went to high school together. And you know, we settled in Philadelphia because we just needed the sport. Because you can't, you know, we went right from man-to-man to zone defense right away, having triplets. So we've been here ever since because, you know, it was home. But I'll tell you, if my wife and I had not been from the same area growing up, we absolutely would have stayed in Kansas City and made our home there. We loved it. We loved everything about it. And but anyway, I've been working in the insurance industry for the last 25-plus years, you know, raised my daughters who are now 25, and one's in med school, one's in law school, and one's a NICU nurse. So they're busy, and they're out doing their thing. One's in New York, two are in Philly. My wife is a doctoral student. I went back and got my MBA recently at the ripe old age of 53 to kind of augment, you know, what I was doing in my insurance career. I coached high school football for 11 years until my daughter started playing college sports. And, you know, I've been doing a podcast every week with the Believe Network with my buddy Jeff Fedotin, who's a Kansas City native and writes for Forbes magazine, covers the Chiefs. And we host a weekly podcast on the Believe Network called Believe in Chiefs. And we love supporting the team and digging up stuff to share with the listeners about, you know, what's going on, all things Kansas City Chiefs. So that's kind of the two-minute rundown of what's been happening in the last 25 years since leaving the wonderful town of KC.
Man, that's just wonderful stuff. So, because Stephen and I have three kids. Stephen has four. I'm counting them all up. Five. And we got to spread ours out a little bit. I'm thinking about you, like going because and yeah. You got twins.
We had boys, and then we had twin girls that are now 13 years old, and so I'm learning exactly what the world is like for real as a parent with 13-year-old twin girls.
I can't imagine.
I'll tell you guys. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the it's so funny how people who have higher, in the multiple world, they call them higher order multiples, right? When you have triplets, quads, and more, which is, you know, when you don't see them as much anymore as you used to. But, you know, we have people fooled because having three kids the same age was a lot easier than having even two kids of different ages. And I'll tell you why, especially when they were all gender. I have all girls, so we had all the same gender. So, you know, we were doing a lot of the things at the same time. You know, we didn't have the one in diapers and the one going to preschool and the one going to T-ball and mm-hmm. Little League and things like that. Like, we were zeroed in. Like, we were focused. And not that we, like, forced our kids to do things all the same, but, you know, listen, I was from the Marty Schottenheimer camps. You know, we had things organized, and I knew my wife and I knew what it was like to organize, you know, a practice schedule and a day schedule and a playbook. And, you know, and so I'll tell you, it was in some ways, looking back in retrospect, easier to have triplets than it was to have even two kids of different ages, just because of the organization skills it needed.
So people that were here in Kansas City and loved the Chiefs in the 90s remember you, obviously, for everything you did around the community, and you were very popular, but you caught some touchdowns, four touchdowns. I mean, when you look back, I mean, you could say, I caught a touchdown pass from Joe Montana. I mean, that's unbelievable. And you were a weapon. Fans loved it when you caught a touchdown. How did that all start? How did that come about to where you became the secret weapon for Marty Schottenheimer?
Wow. You know, you were playing that Stuart Scott clip there about the secret lab, and that it was, right? And, you know, it's funny because you talk about Joe Montana. My dad always used to say, I knew you'd make it to the Hall of Fame, son. I just didn't know it would be on somebody else's plaque. But that's okay. I made it. But, you know, look, you know, I did everything I could in the organization to stay and to be around. And whether it was, you know, long snapping or filling in at every position, you know, I had the great fortune in the starts that I did have, was able to start at every position, including tight end. I actually had a start at tight end, which we started the game in a two tight end set, and I got to be on the starting lineup card as a tight end. So center guard, tackle, and tight end. And so that just kind of tells it all, right? I was there to do whatever I could to be on that roster. And, you know, with my sort of limited, you know, not to say that, look what Justin Watson's doing today, right, my fellow Penn Quaker.
Right.
Not to say that the Ivy League isn't super competitive, but, you know, it's not a football factory, right, league. And so I kind of came into it thinking, all right, I'm going to do whatever I can, whatever this team asks me to do, to get out on the field, play special teams, kickoff return. You know, I was, you know, they always had thrown me in there as the tackle eligible in short yardage and goal line, and even in 1991 and 92. But, you know, there was not a lot of chicanery going on in that 91 and 92 offense, if you know what I mean. We were, you know, it was not a thick playbook. It was smash mouth. So nobody was thinking about throwing it to the big guy. You know, as I called myself, the wide receiver. You know, nobody was thinking about that. I was in there to block. But then Paul Hackett, one day, you know, saw me when Joe Montana. We did have one play where I went into the end zone to be a pick, and I'm telling you, nobody was thinking about throwing it to me except, of course, Joe Montana in his fantastic, you know, sense of humor, says, "Oh, today is going to be the day. I'm going to really pull a fast one on Joe," right? So I go into the, like, 2 or 3 yards into the end zone, and I'm supposed to put my arms up in the air so that Keith Cash, Kimball Anders, and all these guys can cross behind me, and I can literally act as a human wall and as a pick, right, for the backers if they were in some kind of a man or even some kind of a zone, right, to just get in the middle of that zone. And Joe is looking at me, and I could see that boyish smile of his from 10 yards away. And he's pumping the ball, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, "Don't you dare. Don't you dare throw that ball." And he fired at me. You know, Joe, did he have a, you know, he didn't have a deep bomb arm, but he still had a pretty darn good arm at his age when he was with us. And he fired that thing at me, and I stuck my hands up, and all I thought about was my basketball training in high school. I played catcher in high school, and I thought I was actually going to play baseball in college, but that's another story. So I think that's where a little bit of my hand-eye coordination came from. And this thing comes at me, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, what is this thing coming at me? It's leather, it's oval-shaped. I'm like, you know, I hadn't seen, you know, short of playing center or long snapping, I hadn't really touched the ball out in the field in, you know, 20 years. And the thing just comes whipping at me, and I caught it. And Paul Hackett throws his clipboard. He comes running over. He's like, "Oh, my God. You can catch." I was like, "Well, I'm holding this thing in my hand, coach." And, you know, I threw it away like a hot potato. I didn't know what to do with it. And he says to me, "You're going to catch a touchdown pass this year." And I said to myself, wow, this West Coast offense really does open things up. I was like, wow, when you got guys like me becoming targets. So that was where it was born. It was born on the practice field pretty early in the season. If it wasn't camp, I'm having a hard time remember when that actually happened. And, you know, the rest was history. Coach Hackett always seemed to find a way, especially in big games. That was the thing about those touchdowns. They were, like, number one, I got to score against the Raiders. What chief doesn't want to do something memorable against the Raiders, right? We hate the Raiders.
That's right.
then it goes on, then it goes on to, the 49ers, the Joe Montana, Steve Young, like, just what a hyped game that was, right? With all the media attention around it and the relationship with Joe and the 49ers and Steve Young on a beautiful September day at Arrowhead. And then that crazy Monday night game, right, against the Elway Montana shootout, Marty's first win at Mile High Stadium, on Monday night, where, I'm like, oh my God, I think Al Michaels just said my name. Like, I'm like, how did that happen? And then that game in Arizona where we were planning on being back for the Super Bowl that year, because that's where the Super Bowl was held, and we had the best team in the AFC that year, and Buddy Ryan and his, vaunted defense. And then that Steve Bono run was in that game, the 76-yard Bono run. And then I catch a touchdown in that game, thinking in the future stadium of where we might be playing the Super Bowl. And I'm like, wow, it always seemed to happen in a big game, which was really cool. And definitely made them memorable for sure.
Now that is awesome. Joe Valerio is our guest. Before we run out of time, I want to ask you a couple of quick questions about what's happening now with the Chiefs. You had Justin Watson on your podcast, and you mentioned he's a Penn guy. You were a Penn guy. Andy Reid is talked very highly of Justin Watson, and talked about how he's already gained the confidence of Patrick Mahomes. Dave Tobe says he's been a standout on special teams, and they need that because they're looking to replace a lot of different guys, a lot of four-phase guys on special teams. And Mahomes talked about him and said that when he first worked out with him, he called Brett Veach to say, where did you get this guy at, the size and speed? This Justin Watson looks like he could make the team and be a really good special teams player and maybe even make an impact in the passing game.
Oh, he's gritty. I mean, he's a gritty kid, and I like to brag about, the University of Pennsylvania in the Ivy League, probably the grittiest of the schools, especially the football program. They recruit tough kids, come in, want to get a good education, want to play some serious football, and I think he comes from a great family. He's grounded, he's humble, he's hungry, and I'm just really excited. And he got some great training down with the Bucks, right? Playing with Tom Brady for several years. So he was down there around a great receiving core, and I'm just really excited about what he's doing. He's really making a name for himself, and it's really coming down to his effort, his toughness, and his preparedness. And that's what, he told us he was coming into this opportunity for. I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was the first off-season free agent signing for Kansas City this year. So, he was looking at that as, all right, they want to take a chance. I'm going to show them that I'm prepared, gritty, and tough, and I'm going to come into this season ready to win a spot. And he's competed in a deep, deep, very diversified wide receiver core, which I'm most excited about. I am most excited to, of course, I love to watch the line. That's a given. But I'm really excited about watching this wide receiving core that is full of depth and diversity. I'm really excited to watch them play and how they gel for Patrick this year and how they give – Patrick and Eric Bieniemy even more plays in the playbook, which you couldn't even imagine that could happen, but it's definitely going to.
Joe, we're out of time, but man, I want tell people about your podcast, and also you want to do this again, we'd love to have you on a regular basis. Moving forward, we could promote your podcast and you could talk Chiefs football with us and stay connected here in Kansas City. We'd love to have you as a regular guest on during the football season.
I would love it. You got my cell. Let's set it up. Let's do it.
Let's go.
I love staying connected with the city, and any chance I get to celebrate my time in KC and talk about it, I love it. So I am in. I am all in. Let's do it, and let's make it happen. And, so it's the Bleed in Chiefs podcast and the Bleed Podcast Network. I'm at Joe Valerio 73 on social media, and I'm ready to go. Sign me up.
Let's do it. We'll even put you on the air with Tim Grunhardt, unless you want that a clause in the contract. No contact with Tim Grunhardt. It's up to you.
As long as he can concede that I did not say that the University of Pennsylvania could beat Notre Dame in football.
I want to believe that you did, though.
I'll say it.
Right. That's
you guys could have beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, especially with Grunny on the team. Hey, Joe, thanks so much for the time, man. I want to talk to you again real soon. I'm going to put you on hold to talk to our producer, Marco. But great catching up with you, and hope to chat with you next week.
Same, guys. Have a great rest of the week, and I look forward to catching up again soon.
That's Joe Valerio. It was great to hear from him and catch up and what he's doing now and doing this podcast on the Believe Network about the Chiefs, and hopefully we'll have a new Chiefs insider or at least a football analyst for the Border Patrol every week right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol Sports Radio 810 WHB. Here's another man that caught a touchdown pass from Joe Montana, Mr. Gary Lezak. Hello, Gary.
Montana back to pass. And it's Lezak in the end zone. Touchdown!
Wow.
Wow. How did you know that?
Unbelievable. I know a lot of things.
Joe Montana. Golly.
Are you sad that Olivia Newton-John passed away? I was very upset. That she's the biggest crush I've ever had on any woman except for my wife.
Yeah, that was like my high school buddy. Who I'm going to Hawaii with next week. Their biggest crush was Olivia Newton-John. You know, amazing. I remember that way back when. But, yeah, it is sad. It is very sad. You know, she's only 72, 73 years old. Teaches us all, again, how to enjoy every day, Stephen. Every day.
That's right.
Enjoy every day. It is a beautiful morning outside this morning. I have bad dad jokes. I'm not even going to go there. I mean, my writer has lost it.
Right.
They've been, you know, when they're, you know, most of them are pretty bad anyway, right? So I try, but these are real not good. Okay, this is my writer, and I'll work with it. You
need to hire Nate as your writer.
So are you giving us a dad joke or not? Are you just telling us how bad they
well,
are?
Well, not to brag, but I have this incredible talent in predicting what's inside a wrapped present.
Wow.
It's a gift.
Oh, jeez. That was actually pretty good. I actually fell for that one.
Ooh. That's it. I'm going to leave it there.
Yes. Yeah, go out on a high note. Don't push your luck.
I could say I went bald from my stress after my pet rabbit died.
Because you lost your hair.
I am now completely hairless.
Yeah.
Not as good. That one was predictable. I saw
Marco with the premature.
Yeah, yeah, the premature laugh track didn't help either.
Well, that's usually how my jokes go. I don't ever get to the punchline, so you're just not sure where to put that. You know, that's where I need Jeff Penner. Jeff Penner says I make people giggle a lot, but then Jeff needs to be in there for the punchline, or Steven, or Nate.
By the forecast, that could be the punchline.
You want the forecast? It is gorgeous. What a great day. Got down into the low to mid 60s this morning. A couple spots just north of KC, close to the 50s, near 60 degrees. The humidity is down 85 degrees for today's high temperature. The average high is 89 still. Those averages will be coming down. Nearly 100% sunshine. Right now it's 100% sunshine. So put on that sunscreen, enjoy the day. It's going to be fantastic. I blogged about this dry spell we're in, the LRC. Go read it, kshb.com. We are in the same pattern from 8 months ago, all predictable. 1.5 more months, 2 months from now, we'll be in a brand new pattern. Can't wait. Have a great day. Right now, the pattern's just beautiful, beautiful. Have a good day, guys.
That was Gary Lezak. We'll be back after this with Mark Boerichter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.